Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Sunday, everyone, and thanks for taking the time to tune in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I, as always, am Jason Ophir, joined with psychic medium Sherry. Hey, Sherry, what's happening?
Hey, Jason. Nothing happening. I'm just cleaning house and doing readings, and that's pretty much about it. What about you?
Oh, living the dream. I've had a really hard week this week, really hard work week. Things for me have been a little bit different. I don't know if you want me to tell you about that. It might be kind of boring to everyone, but I can.
No, go for it. We can talk about anything we want.
Oh, that's right. Oh, so my week, you know, normally I work 9:30 to 6 in a hospital laboratory, you know, dealing with specimens and fluids and all that disgusting stuff you can imagine. Let me just say the human body is rather disgusting. Some of the things that come out of the human body is absolutely disgusting. So normally that's what I do, but I was specially requested to go from my smallish hospital to the regional laboratory, which is a big thing where one of the largest health systems in the state. So they send all their specimens to this big regional laboratory. And I was requested to go there. And apparently the duty I was supposed to perform was in the microbiology department to pour off all the COVID specimens, meaning I would spend 8 hours a day handling COVID fluid. And so I agreed to it. I probably shouldn't have. After I had already agreed to it, I was like, do I really want to just handle COVID all day long? And I handle COVID all day long in a hospital, but when you're talking regional laboratory, you're getting those specimens from everywhere in the state. But since I had already agreed to it, I just decided, okay, you know, I'll just suck it up. I don't know anything about the regional microbiology department. I started my lab career in the regional processing department, so I know the building, but I know nothing about microbiology. So I go there, and immediately I could tell that these people think I'm completely useless because they asked me if I knew how to plate stuff. You know, when you have, like, you put swabbing on agar plates and blood cultures and all the sorts of different cultures, you need to swab on plates. Well, I don't do that a lot in the hospital. So they're just making me feel like I'm totally useless. Now, mind you, when I work in a hospital, I'm actually really, really good at my job. But that's the one thing I don't do very often. So trying to sit me down in a department I've never been to deal with all these cultures, I would have no idea what I'm doing. So what do? They send me down to the regional processing department, and that is where all the specimens come in. They have to be logged in and stabilized and stuff like that. Well, I worked there years ago, so I know a couple people there, and it was just really, really awkward and kind of uncomfortable because things are different. Working in a hospital is not the same as working in a regional laboratory. So I go down there, I do the shift in regional processing, all that's fine. So it was agreed that I'd come back and do the next 2 days in the regional processing department, which I was cool with. I have some friends there, you know, low stress. And if you know anything about me, I do not like change. I do not like major change, especially with work. So, you know, I'm nervous. So I get there to show up the second day in regional processing, and the supervisor's there, and they're like, oh, microbiology wants you back. Now, I've already developed a bad opinion of working in microbiology, so I was doing everything I possibly could not to go back up to the microbiology department. But at some point, I realized, you know, I'm going to have to do it. There's no way out of this short of just throwing my ID on the ground and quitting, which I thought about, but I thankfully I didn't. So I go back up to the microbiology department, and they just want me to do the processing up there. I got 30 minutes of training, and it was so – I mean, I know all the processes and stuff like that, but they do things differently in microbiology. So I got 30 minutes of instruction, and fortunately, I know the systems, and I know how to process, and I trudged through it. Man, they get so many specimens. And the COVID specimens just keep coming. They were literally – there was a mountain of COVID swabs that I wasn't able to even touch because I was – you know, I'm logging in body fluids and cultures and all that. So – and the other thing that kind of sucked about it is you know, I wouldn't even get off work until 1:30 in the morning, and my body's not used to that. And then I wouldn't even get home till 2 a.m., and then I'd stay up till 3 a.m., and it was just stressful. I'm glad that it's over with, and that's my weekly work rant.
Wow. Do you think they'll expect you to go back there?
I certainly hope not. What I've learned from this is to never volunteer for anything. So I think I'm just going to have this rule where I just – volunteer to do anything. Now, if I got sent back there to do the same kind of thing, I would probably do it because, honestly, after a full shift that second day I was there, I had it pretty well down. You know, I had it down pretty well. There was a bunch of stuff that comes in that I'm not sure how to deal with, but for the majority of the stuff, the urine, the swabs, the body fluids, you know, I pretty much figured out where everything goes and what needs to go with what. So I could probably do it again. But would I want to work there full-time? No, because even after a shift of doing that, my shoulder started to hurt. You're sitting down all the time. But I probably would, just because it would be less nerve-wracking, because I kind of understand that, you know. And everybody is so burned out in healthcare. That was the other thing that was bothering me, is no one really is – well, not everybody, but some people just aren't really friendly, and I kind of struggle with that. Everybody's burned out. I'm burned out. I'm seriously considering a career change because the medical field is, I'm just tired of it.
Seriously. Wow. You know, Jason, I wanted to share this with you that, you know, I think that you should do what you're passionate about. You know, if there's any interest, whether it's playing the guitar or your photography or, you know, just saying, making coffins or something like that. You know, do what you love to do. And if you're getting burned out, that's a sign. I feel this is just me personally. If you find that you have a passion of doing something that you enjoy, whether it's one thing, two things, three things, the money will come along because it's like you're just already manifesting, and it's just a matter of time. But, you know, when you're burned out, and I'm going to say this, I think I said this on air before, I go to a store or go to a, you know, DMV or DOQ or, you know, any place, and you can tell that majority of people are just like a bunch of zombies. They're just a bunch of robots. They're just doing what they're told, and they're doing the very least possible. And I'm saying this, least possible, because these people don't have a passion for customer service anymore. Most people, I would say, honestly, 90%, I'm being very honest, when I observe as a psychic medium, when I observe, most people do not enjoy what they're doing. They're doing it because they're earning a paycheck and they got to feed their families or feed themselves. That's it.
Well, the problem is, absolutely, but the problem with my situation is what I enjoy doing is laying in bed and watching Netflix, and I have yet to find a way I can make a living out of doing that. Maybe there is.
Well, you're to play games, so you could be a gamer. You could be a person who could be, you know, I don't know, you know, or you can start, you know, a club or something where people that are gaming. I don't know. You know, you're really good at that kind of stuff, especially when you, you know, when you have certain strategic games or, you know, you're just trying out, you know, different new ones that are coming out. So you just never know. I know you like or you know, you can get paid doing reviews. If you're on Netflix, you can probably get paid doing reviews when you have to go probably a different marathon, but, you know, kind of one thing after another. But I hear that people get paid. Oh, you can get paid for cuddling, too, you know.
So you mentioned the cuddling thing, and I ran into an article a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was kind of funny but also quite creative. There is some guy, and I don't remember what city he's in, but you know how you have people that will walk your pets? He's a people walker. He basically gets paid to go on walks with people and have conversation.
There's nothing wrong with that because it's been happening a long time ago. It's like companionship. You know, when you go to an agency, the agency is probably charging that person when they're walking somebody, probably $50 an hour, and then the person walking somebody is only making 20 or maybe 25 if that's the case. So it's a companionship, yeah. You'd be surprised, or walking their pets, you know, dog walkers, you know. I mean, whatever you want to create, I think somebody's coming up with that. Or cuddling with your cats, you know, if the cats are, you know, abandoned and the owners are home all the time, maybe they pay you $25-$30 an hour for just cuddling with their cat for a couple hours or something. Who knows?
A professional cat cuddler.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, it's crazy what people would, you know, invent. And there's all kinds of things that people would do. And some of them, like that lady that's a cuddle, I guess she was bragging. I saw that, too. It was probably, what, a year or 2 years ago? She was making buku bucks. I think she was making close to six-figure income just cuddling people because a lot of times people are very lonely and they don't have partners and they just get paid. Instead of paid prostitute, they're paid cuddlers.
I don't know if that'd work with me. I have this. I don't like to be touched. So, yeah, I'm gonna have to come up. So I
That's funny, Jason, because I'm like that too. I don't either. I don't like to be touched either.
If I can,
especially if I don't know you.
Too close. But
I can hear you.
So there's.
Okay.
Well, there's two things I wanted to mention, two things that came across my paranormal plate. And as you know, if they listen to this, the format's kind of changed. We're just kind of talking about whatever. It's not necessarily paranormal. What's going on in our daily lives, the news, paranormal, whatever. But there are two paranormal things I wanted to mention that I came across. There's some video that came out, and I believe it was relatively recently. A giant triangular craft was seen hovering over the Pentagon, and it was captured by three different cameras, which I think kind of makes it more believable. Of course, it could be a hoax, could be an elaborate hoax. The thing I'm questioning about it is there was another video that came out. And apparently there was I don't remember who the lady was, but it was a United Nations meeting. Somebody had snuck in a secret camera, and this lady's addressing the United Nations saying how we had just made contact with alien life forms, and she was referring to the giant triangular craft, pyramid-shaped actually, pyramid-shaped craft that was hovering over the Pentagon. And so she was talking about it, and... But somebody found out that video of her had been doctored, and it appeared to be fake. Somebody had somehow imposed her in this video of her addressing the United Nations, whereas it was really somebody else. So I don't know if it's an elaborate hoax. Who knows what's going on with that? And then the other thing I came across dates all the way back to 1951 in the Korean War was a pretty significant UFO story that happened back then. And I had never heard it before. I've kind of got my feelers in the UFO for many years, and I had never heard about this one, but I found it was kind of interesting, which was a company of soldiers. They were an artillery company, were about to bombard a village in North Korea, and a bunch of people in this company, if not all of them, observed a light descending over the village, and it descended just as they started their artillery barrage, and the airburst artillery were exploding around this craft or this large light, and it was having no effect on the object. And after some time, this object came closer to this artillery company, and one of the soldiers asked their officer if they could shoot it with their M1 rifle that has armor-penetrating rounds, and he was given the order that he could. And he began to shoot his rifle at this object, and he could hear the bullets hit with a metallic tink, which was interesting because the artillery barrage had no effect, and then suddenly he could shoot it with his rifle, and he could hear the rounds hit, so maybe it turned off his shields or whatever. But shooting this thing did not end up well because this craft then began to shoot pulses of light at the people there, and then shortly after the aircraft disappeared. Well, the people were there were suddenly stricken with dysentery and ridiculously high white cell counts, and they have suffered long-term effects to this day from whatever this craft was shooting at them, whatever this ray was. Some have speculated it's radiation, but who knows. But it seemed to be fairly credible, as there were at least a couple dozen witnesses to this event. So I looked at that story. Actually, what I did was I think I saw it on YouTube. I was watching a YouTube video on it, and then I ran across it again online in written format, and I briefly scanned it over. So I thought that was interesting, 1951 Korea.
Wow. And those people really were stricken by whatever, you know, it is kind of like a payback. You know, you're going to mess with us, we're going to mess with you kind of thing.
Supposedly all of them, if not many of them. What was interesting about the light that shot out of the craft is you could only perceive it if it was shooting at you. So, like, if it was shooting the guy next to you, you wouldn't be able to perceive that it was shooting anything. But then when it got to you, you were seeing the flashes of light, or that's the best that I can interpret that.
Wow. Do you believe in UFOs, Jason, personally?
Oh, you think, of course, you know I do. I believe a lot of them are military aircraft being tested. You know, back in the days when they were doing the Ox Cart, which I believe was the name before the SR-71 Blackbird, people would report seeing strange objects, which turned out to be the U-2 spy plane or the SR-71 Blackbird, probably the 117th Skyhawk or whatever.
So you don't think these UFOs can be alien, alien background, you know, or they're maybe the grays, or, you know, the different types of alien species that may be possible that are inside the spacecraft?
I mean, just my logic tells me that probably the vast majority of sightings are either atmospheric phenomenon or experimental aircraft we're not aware about. But then you also have to throw in the fact that the government has a history of faking alien abductions on people, which there have been several cases of people that were in the UFO community that were, in deep in the UFO community and experiencers, and the government comes in and tries to get them to believe they're being abducted by aliens and stuff like that. I'm pulling this off the top of my head. I don't remember the details of the cases. I know one of the cases was a guy that was in Arizona or Nevada. He lived close to an Air Force base, and he somehow inexplicably tapped into the Air Force's base encrypted radio signals. And they found out about it, and they went through great lengths to harass him and make him think he was going crazy by doing all this crazy stuff. And yeah, so it, you know, it's hard to know exactly what's going on out there with the government, and then you got natural stuff happening. Who knows? We'll probably never know, or maybe we will.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good possibility. You may not never ever know. That's it, yeah. So, but you know, this is me. I think personally, there is a possibility there is UFOs and could be, you know, aliens of different species that we are we don't understand or who they are or that, things like that. So I see that what you're saying, then that's a possibility also too. I just don't want to be closed-minded and say, no, that ain't happening. And then you get the surprise of your lifetime kind of thing. But there's so many different pictures. And, you know, I don't know if you ever seen this, I know we call that on cable. It's called Paranormal Caught on Tape. And I don't know, but probably about a month ago, I spent probably a couple hours watching it. It's quite interesting where you have these people will go and submit their own photography of the different things, whether it's UFO, whether it's hauntings, whether it's, you know, cryptozoology, things like that. And I don't know. Some of it may be true. Some of them may not be true. I don't know.
There's a lot of weird stuff that goes on. You know, some of the other stories that I've run across are, you know, that large hadron, whatever, collider, that particle accelerator, you know what I'm talking about, CERN, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I've read stories about when they fired that thing up, there were a lot of paranormal events that have happened. And initially when they fired up, there's some video or some photos out there that there was a large electrical storm above CERN, and people thought that it was going to open up a black hole or a portal to another dimension. Probably the craziest thing I heard with that was that there was a scientist there, the one that was in charge of CERN's operation, and she had decided to go up to a certain power level that CERN hadn't been to before, like significantly higher. And so she ordered them to do that, and they got the power juices going. They got to that level that she had instructed, and all the power in the facility went out. Nobody could see anything, and then, you know, the emergency lights come on, and that scientist vanished from nowhere. So people are saying or claiming that the CERN is able to open gateways to another dimension, and that they're using it to communicate with aliens. But you just never know, really. I mean, that's the problem, is it could be true, it could not be true. Who knows? It's probably not.
Exactly. You just never know. Yeah. Oh, I like watching that, you know, that kind of stuff, the paranormal, you know. I mean, I kind of keep an open mind and say, okay, you know, is that true? The person that's submitting these video clips can be true and cannot be true. And then I thought, okay, it's time to switch out and, you know, watch something lighthearted and funny and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's you never know what's out there. Just never know. But I do have to say that I was with my girlfriend probably about a couple months ago, and we were up late night. We like to sometimes go to Walmart. And she was just shopping, you know, just kind of roaming around, getting away, you know. And as we were looking, I seen a light above the sky. And I'm not kidding you, Jason, but that light was, I did not think it was a, you know, airplane, because it wasn't moving. It was at night. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and the thing was just kind of like blinking. It was way up in the sky, but blinking, but not moving. That was kind of strange. I mean, that was the first time I actually seen something that's kind of, what is that? Could it be a drone? But it wasn't moving. It's just like a light blinking, and it wasn't too. It was close enough that you can see it, but not too far where you think it was a planet or a star. Mm-mm. It was just too close.
What day was that? Because I saw something blinking 2 days ago.
Oh, no. This was probably a couple months ago, honestly. This was really probably nothing recent. Probably a couple months ago. But when you look at it, it was too far for it to be a star or a planet. But then again, it was close enough that it was just like I said, you're wondering what was it? It was blinking and then it would stay. It would not even move. It was weird. It was just strange. Very, very strange.
Well, do what the government always claims. It's like Mercury or Mars or something.
Oh.
Oh,
my
Saturn.
Gosh. Saturn. I don't know. It's hard to say.
You know, if
it's
we didn't have so
say.
Much light, if we didn't have so much light pollution, we'd probably see a lot more. The other thing is, there's not a lot of people look up, including myself. I think if we all started to look up every once in a while, we'd start to see some stuff that made us scratch our heads.
Yeah, exactly. This made me scratch my head. Like, what is this? I asked my girlfriend. We were out there. It was cold. I told her, this is really unusual. This is not like it wasn't moving. It was just stationary, and it would just once in a while blink. It was weird. Jason, for the life of me, I don't know. We stood there probably for about 15, 20 minutes. Then we went into we went into Walmart, kind of did our thing, came out, and the thing moved to a different location, but it was doing the same thing. It moved, but it didn't. It was acting the same way, which is kind of like really like bright, and then it would blink once in a while. It was strange. I just don't know what it could have been. But anyway, it is what it is, and it was good. Like you said, I'm guilty of that too. I don't see things looking up sometimes, and I should be more aware of it. But it was, I felt like it was a UFO. Definitely.
Well, it definitely was a UFO because you couldn't identify it. I mean, technically.
No.
I've seen a few things similar three different times many years ago, 20, 25 years ago, out in the country where you could actually see the stars. I would be looking up at the stars, and I would see a star. You know, it's not moving, and then suddenly it would just have a big flash, and it would disappear. I've seen it like three times. It's like, did I just see a star explode? Like what's up with that?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. Wow. That's crazy. And a couple days ago, you said?
No, a couple days ago, I was working at this regional laboratory driving at home at 1:45 in the morning. And there was just a pulsing white light in the clouds, but I didn't think much of it because it's on a flight path, so I figured it was just a plane. But it seemed kind of unusually bright. I'm sure it was just a plane, but I noticed it, and I'd never seen that before. It's always cloudy here, you know, and you tend to notice those things. But it seemed to me it was unusually bright. Other than that, I haven't really seen much going on up in the skies lately. I will say, though, not UFO related, I may have had a paranormal experience in my house about a week ago. We have two cats, and this is a brand new house, literally, like it was just built a few months ago. I do not think it's haunted. I was sitting on the couch, kind of half on the couch, you know, where my ass is kind of on the edge. And I feel something warm and fuzzy behind me, like walk behind me. I mean, I could feel it on my back, and I didn't think anything of it, but I instantly kind of turned around, and nothing was there. I mean, like, there were no cats anywhere. I was like, well, that was weird. What? I mean, it definitely had the impression of a cat, so maybe it was a ghost cat. I have no idea.
Did it feel like an animal or a human? Something human?
Absolutely.
What did it feel like?
It was absolutely a warm, furry animal. That's what kind of tripped me out about it was like cat.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, I know the animals that cross over. Sometimes, not always. Sometimes, I'm going out there. I'm putting myself out there. Will make themselves known through pictures. I have witnessed that myself when my cat died. when my cat died, within probably 6 months, I was taking a picture out on the water in the backyard out by the creek. And all of a sudden, when I saw, just for, you know, giggles and everything, I just started taking pictures. I have a portal, to be honest with you. I have a portal in my backyard. So I was taking pictures, and all of a sudden, after coming in and blowing it up on my iPad, I look, and it's like, oh, my gosh, it looks like my cat. It looked like my cat was floating. I can show you a picture. It looked like my cat was floating on top of the water looking at me. It was weird. Never expected that.
Yeah, I'd like to see the picture of that.
Well, I'm going to send you right now. I'm going to send you a picture of a possible, and I'm saying possible because I don't know. I'm not one of these experts or anything like that. But I'm going to send you right now, as soon as I can, I'm going through my pictures, I'm going to send you two pictures. Do you remember Laura? It's probably been about 4 years ago. She's the tree lady. She's a photographer, but she takes all these pictures on these elementals, these gnomes and all kinds of things inside rocks and trees and things like that. She's out of Salem. Do you remember her?
I do remember that.
Okay, so she had shared with me. She was in Salem, and I'm still trying to go over these pictures. She was in Salem, and for whatever reason, she was driven to take a picture of the sky. And when she did, she got a picture of what she believes a UFO. So I'm going to send this to you. It looks like the mothership and the other beings that are out there. And I'm trying to go through this so I can send this to you. That's crazy. And like I said, I don't know because I've never had that. But, you know, she knows, along with Andrea Perone from The Conjuring, they know, they in their own eyes and their own belief that they know they exist. And not the kind that's from the military. We're talking about aliens that are inhabiting inside the craft. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So I'm going over here. Yeah.
She's got great stories.
She's very Andrea, we gotta have her back. Well, do you know that the house that she lived in, the people that bought the house, the couple, they use that as a tour for the public.
Yeah, I did hear that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and they do believe that the place is haunted. I wouldn't want to be there. That's me. Would you, if somebody asked me, hey, would you like to spend the night? No, thank you. No,
I'd spend the
night
there.
I don't want to know that.
I don't think I'd do it alone, but if I was with somebody else, I'd probably spend the night there. You know, as the years go on, I've been in the paranormal officially since 2008, and I want to say that as time goes on, I become more and more skeptical on everything. So it's because of my healthy skepticism that I would be willing to stay in a house like that. Just at least to see what's up. Plus, I play a lot of horror VR games, so I've kind of trained myself not to be as scared.
I don't think I would want to go. If you're asking me, no. No, thank you.
Earlier today, I played Phasmophobia, and if those that don't know, it's you're basically a paranormal investigator with three other investigators with all the equipment. It's in virtual reality, so it's like you're there. You turn your head, you move your hands. That relates to what you see. And so I went in and I investigated a horribly haunted. Well, actually, every time you haunt in that game, you go to a haunting in that game, it is terribly haunted because at some point the ghost hunts you. And the last one that actually killed me, it was a little girl in pajamas with dark black hair that's crawling on the floor, and you're trying to get away from her. So, yeah, so I pretty much, this is my training to get back into paranormal investigating. If I can survive that, then, you know, I'm good in the real world.
Does it get your heart racing when you play the games like that, and especially in that type of game you're playing?
No, I'm pretty much dead to it. Now, there are some games that I have that are scarier that do kind of creep me out, but that game to me doesn't scare me too much. I've played it a lot. I'm like a level 145, so I put some time into it.
Wow. See, and that, you know, I don't know. Maybe you can get paid doing those games. Who knows?
Yeah, it's entertaining. I love virtual reality. I should post some more videos on the Facebook page and so y'all can see what I'm talking about. It's fantastic.
Do you play with other people all around the world? Because my husband does. He plays with people all around the world from, you know, from UK to where's the Norwegian people, you know? I mean, he plays all over Canada, people all over the world.
Oh yeah, I play with people. A lot of them end up being in England, and it, you know, I played that game today, Phasmophobia, and I'd totally forgotten that last week's show was a guy, I can't remember his name, who plays Phasmophobia, and he believes that because he was using the Ouija board in this virtual reality game, it opened a portal, and now he has a horrible haunting. And if you listen to last week's episode, it sounded like something was going on because he had to get off the phone. And I'd forgotten about that. So maybe I would be a little bit more nervous playing this game. But I totally forgot about him and his experience. So, because, yes, in Phasmophobia, you can use a Ouija board, and it does work. I don't think it's going to keep me from playing the game anymore.
Yeah, I don't play games. I like to read. You know, I'll go into reality TV if I'm, you know, want to kind of, you know, just kind of wander off. But, or I do a lot of reading, you know, or listening to, music, depending on my mood and everything. But, no, I don't play games. I don't find it, to myself, I don't find it very entertaining. Mm-mm.
Well, I would love nothing than to have you come over to my place, sit you in a chair, put you into a virtual reality ghost investigation just to watch to see how you react to it.
Seriously. Do you have those with the goggle type of things where you get to see, 3D or 4D or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, you
yeah,
do?
That's exactly,
really?
Seriously. It's amazing.
Wow. Wow. Is it addicting?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a gamer. You have to like video games. But I also have a PlayStation 4, but nothing. Once you experience good VR games, they're not all good. But once you experience good ones, there's no point to go back to console gaming because it's completely immersive. It's like you're there. I mean, for example, I have a game called X-Plane 11 that I can fly a 747 or a jet, and it's literally you have to operate the plane as you would in real life. It is completely realistic.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
You have to know all the switches and everything. I mean, it's a simulator. It's exactly like it is, and needless to say, I crashed a 737. I lost control of it. But I can take off pretty good. I'm just not real great at landing.
I was going to ask you, how are you with your cats? How are they coming along now that they were rescued, correct?
Yes, they're adorable. They're both sweet. I were a little concerned last night because one of them started projectile vomiting all over the place. And she is eating, but just not eating, as much as she was before. But she's acting fine. I mean, so I'm a little worried. What I worry about is, you know, swallowing string and getting an obstruction. But she's acting okay, so I'm a little concerned because I'm poor. I'm a very poor person, so I can't afford a massive vet bill. I still haven't paid off the last vet, you know, the initial vet visit. This is why I want to be rich. I can.
Oh, man.
Because I hate to say it, if one of these cats gets really sick, I'm not going to have a means to pay a vet bill, you know, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to max out credit cards. You know, I don't want to go in debt. So it does concern me having pets. I understand that that's the responsibility that you take on, but, you know, the place I lived at before, one of her cats, it was a rescue as well, broke its leg really bad and needed surgery. She threw down $6,000 to fix the cat's leg, but she also has a lot of money to do that. If that happens to me, we're going to have to take the leg off or something, you know.
Or a worst-case scenario, you know, is ask your mom and dad or, you know, ask your mom, worst-case scenario, ask your mom and dad and you know, go from there, or maybe somebody can set up a, you know, for animals, one thing, you know, maybe set up a GoFundMe fund, you know, for your animal to help pay for it, you know. That I can understand something like that when you're in, you know, in a destitute situation, you're going to do what you can to help with the animal. That's one thing. You know what I mean? So, but, yeah, what do you think about these GoFundMe? They're, you know, it's crazy how some people just, this is kind of a rant, but some people just take advantage of it. You know, it's like, I know these businesses, I'm small business myself. I'm just trying to eke out, you know, just to pay my rent and everything else. But you get some of these people that are asking for other people, you know, hey, I need to go and survive and everything else. And I understand when you're small business, but if you're driving around a Mercedes or a Porsche, it's like, oh, my gosh, go sell your vehicle so that you can make it on your own instead of driving around an expensive car and expect people to pay for your existence. You know, that to me, that's my pet peeve. I don't mind helping people, you know, or rescues or things like that. But when you're driving and you're living in luxury and everything, you should not be taking money from other people. You should actually be selling your stuff so that you can make it. I don't care whether you're self-employed or not. You should not be going and driving nice vehicles than most people have and taking other people's money that are hard-earned money and paying taxes.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't donate to those things. I know a lot of them are legit and people are in crisis and need help, but there's also a lot of people that take advantage of those, you know, that kind of stuff and have been busted for doing it. I've heard stories of, you know, the people that stand on the corner asking for money, and a bunch of those people have been busted out. You know, people follow them at the end of the day and they're getting in nice cars and going to nice homes. People that have done that have claimed that they make in excess of a six figures a year panhandling. And so it's hard to wade through all the dishonesty and deception. So I figure, I mean, and even if you donate to charities, some charities, you know, for every dollar you donate, like 2 cents is going to actually to whatever the actual cause is. You know, it's hard to navigate through all the BS having to do with giving because, you know, there's so much.
Yeah, fraud and everything. And, you know, like if you have your kid, you know, if you're on low income and your kid needs surgery, oh, that's warranted. Or you're needing surgery or something for your cat, or, you know, or you're, you know, you can't even make your rent and, you know, or you're on food stamps or something like that. That's understandable. But when you're, like I said, I know somebody set up a thing, you know, GoFundMe, and here they are driving a Porsche and they have a home that they own. Come on. Are they? this is just ridiculous. And the other person is driving a Mercedes and they're bragging about it. You know, it's like, wow. Some people have no integrity. I wouldn't be taking money. I would say, don't set one up for me. I can sell my car and help other people or something, or make my own rent instead of saying, yeah, that'd be fine. I couldn't do this, you know, but still accept the money when people send you money. You know, it's crazy. Yeah, I that to me is just flat taking advantage of people.
And even some of these rescues, I feel like, and I could be wrong, take advantage of people. I was on the verge of adopting a pet, an exotic pet. And, you know, these pets, these people get these animals. They're donated because the people that own them can't take care of them. And I know that there are expenses incurred with that. You know, I'm sure they pay a reduced rate for veterinary care, or maybe even get free veterinary care, and the food costs a little bit and stuff like that. But when I went to adopt this animal, they're like, yeah, it's going to be $2,000. And I'm like, what?
No,
$2,000?
Really? Are you serious? Animals,
so
that's
it's not like they're sitting on these animals for years and paying tons of money. You know, they get the animal in a week or two, they adopt it out. And so I just don't see the expense with that. In my case, it was, you know, a parrot. But then to say, yeah, it's going to be $2,000 or $1,800, I was kind of flabbergasted. I could go take the money that you're asking me to rescue this animal and just go to a pet store and pay that. And so I was I was kind of disheartened because I've noticed other ones, particularly with exotic birds, that are more reasonable, where they adopt out for $400 or $500 to me, which is reasonable. But $2,000, I mean, yeah, it was just ridiculous.
That's highway robbery. Yeah, you're just taking advantage. And even like an animal rehoming. Why don't you just make sure that the animal is going to a really, I mean, do your research, do your due diligence, make sure that they don't come from, you know, druggies and alcohols and things like that, and problems with neglect and abandonment and things like that. Set them into a good home, interview them, or find somebody that can do that kind of stuff and just rehome them. Why do you want to go and call? Because it's all about the money. Well, you know, you took the responsibility to home the dog in the first place. Why do you want somebody to pay you to rehome the dog? To me, that's just wrong. And it's just like, you got me on a rant, you know, whether it's animals or, you know, when you get like a cat or a dog, you know, people are spending $500, $600, $1,000 on a purebred. To me, it's an animal. They all have a soul. And, you know, to go and support puppy mills, whether it's dogs or cats, is just wrong. You know, there's so many animals that need to be rescued and need to be adopted. People get really weird and picky, you know. I'm a big proponent of adoption, rescuing and adoption, and just go in and neutering and spaying your animals. Because you wouldn't have that problem. I had a girlfriend last night I talked to after her reading from Hawaii, and we were talking about, she says, Hawaii is so hard and so awful. The people, a lot of the people won't or cannot because they can't afford to spay and neuter. So what they did a couple months ago, the Oregonians had, they shipped them over 650 dogs from Hawaii. I don't know what island it was. But they shipped over that many dogs just so that they can get a chance to be adopted out in Oregon, Washington, Montana, and I think it was Idaho. We have to be responsible as owners to take care of our animals. I'm
absolutely
on a rampage.
I see a lot of dogs getting shipped from Texas and stuff like that because I was looking to actually get a dog. And, you know, I was on Craigslist all the time looking at pets. And it was so frustrating. The biggest beef I had with Craigslist was that they would, even just thinking about this phrase drives me crazy. Nearly all of them say rehoming fee applies. Now, I don't have a problem with a rehoming fee, but when you don't specify what it is, it drives me crazy. So I would just,
you know,
times out of 10,
That's crazy. Yeah, why would they want to do a rehoming fee? Just get make sure they get to a really, you know, good place. That's all. It's just, it's too bad. It's just really too bad. Wow. So anyway,
yep.
Animals, you know, we're their voice, and they have a, you know, they have a right to have, you know, a good life and everything. But when it comes to animals, I like Cesar Millan. I like the way he trains dogs. He said that there's 95% of dogs are not, they can actually be rehabilitated. It's the people. It's the people that don't have the time. They don't have the skills. They don't have the discipline. They don't have the consistency. They don't have the boundaries, and they don't have the love that they need to give to make the animal a healthy animal. Absolutely. You have to. It's a reflection. Dogs are a reflection of their humans. I believe so. I don't care if they come from a bad past. You got to work with them. You got to have the skills and learn the skills to work with them. Very few dogs are, they call, red zone dogs where they have to be euthanized. A lot of them are so damaged, you just got to learn to deal with it and rehab them.
People are ridiculous, let me tell you. I see people walking around, you know, and there's just a lot of people that aren't bright. I hate to say it, but that's the truth. You know, I went to the grocery store yesterday, you know, and you're required to wear masks. I see like elderly people walking around with the mask below their nose, just covering their mouth. I'm like, and I see it all the time. And I know it's not because they don't know how to properly wear a mask, because it's endemic. I see it everywhere. And they're just lazy, or there's people that just die that COVID's real. Now, you know me, I'm Mr. Conspiracy Theorist, but I'll tell you, I work in a hospital. I know COVID's real. Am I going to get the vaccine? Probably not. I had to fill out something to stratify my risk where I worked. Am I high risk? Am I medium or low risk? And I have to fill this out so the health system knows what risk level I'm at, because that's going to determine when I'm offered the vaccine. And so I did that. I'm medium risk because I handle specimens. And then they also ask, are you highly likely to take the vaccine? Are you kind of in the air? Are you like, no? And I'm like, yeah, no. I mean, that's just how I feel about it.
Are they going to treat you different? I'm not going to take the vaccine. Dr. Mercula is not going to take the vaccine. Elizabeth, his fiance, she's a journalist, a very well-known journalist. I like to have them on our radio show. Man, they really have a lot of information. So does Ty Bollinger, Ty and Charlotte Bollinger. But when you get these guys on radio and everything, they're not going to take the vaccine either. That's why, like I was telling you before our conversation, where they moved to, they moved their stuff, you know, their accounts to those places that I mentioned earlier. But by the way, I'm on a tangent here. I did send you the picture of the UFO. So if you want to check your text, not your Facebook, but your regular text, there's two pictures, and Laura had actually circled what she thought was interesting. So anyway, yeah, it's, you know, the vaccine, a lot of people are going to take the vaccine. Some people are, some people aren't. And I think that shouldn't be a mandatory thing. I think it's something that everybody should have a choice. You know, that's just me. But I'm off the beaten path anyway. It's an individual right whether you decide you want to go and have the vaccine. It's just like the flu. I don't take the flu shot. I don't like the flu shot. I just don't want to take a chance. I try and keep my immune system healthy as possible, and I try and keep away from people that are sick. There's no guarantee, but, you know, that I try and do what I can in what my knowledge of my own body and how I feel.
And I also want to say I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I have had to have all sorts of vaccines. I've had the varicella vaccine because I never had chickenpox. I've got the hepatitis B vaccine, you know, your MMR, your tetanus. But I don't want something that's been rushed through that has no long-term studies with a technology or a methodology that is not really been used. Well, it has not been used on a wide scale. It's, the methodology with the RNA vaccine has, you know, been around since the 80s or whatever, but it's never been used on a large scale. So I just prefer to sit things out for a little bit and see how that all falls out.
Right, exactly. It's too soon, and they're trying to rush it out, like you said. And you already read reports that, you know, you have to have them in doses. And some people, they say something about if you're a diabetic, you may have severe reactions to the vaccine. Well, it's like a severe reaction to the drugs you buy, you know, that drugs you take if you're going to take some drugs. You know, they talk about, well, you know, this will cure your maybe depression, but upon curing your depression, you may have problems of the following, you know, and they list all these things that could happen where, you know, could be all the different side effects. That's what my concern is. What are the side effects and what is long term that can happen? You know, that's the whole key. Being known about it, being told about it, transparency.
Well, you know, we'll just have to see what happens. That's just how I feel about it. I'm sure if people, if you're high risk, then absolutely you should roll the dice on the vaccine. You know, if I was 75 years old, yeah, I probably would. If I live, it was in a care home, yeah, I probably would as well.
Yeah,
but
and like in Oregon, I was out reading in the Oregonian that the people that are dying, yeah, there's young ones too, but I'd say it looks like in Oregon, the majority of them are older people, you know, when they're high 80s, 70s, 80s, and they're probably in not good health. That's probably what it is, and they can't fight it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and also another one, if you're in direct patient care, doctor, a nurse, then, yeah, you should probably get it. But that's not my situation. I'm not it's not regular for me to have patient care. I just work in a laboratory, so.
Wow. Yeah, just crazy. You just kind of, you know, take your health into your own hands. Be due diligence. Do your research and try and be as healthy as you can. You know, eat right if you can and get some sleep and keep your stress level to a minimum. That's just the basic. It's just basic. That's all it is. So. But anyway, we're getting close to the holidays. Are you getting ready, Jason? I know we only have a few minutes left. Are you getting close to the holidays?
I am completely apathetic. I'm indifferent. It means nothing to me. I'm not a holiday person at all. Just not today. It's like, hey, are you going to decorate, blah, blah, blah? And I haven't, you know, and then they offered, hey, we got some extra stuff you can decorate with. It's not that I'm anti-Christmas. I'm lazy. This is the bottom line. No, I don't really care to decorate. So, just work.
I didn't either this year. I know, because I would have to put it all down. It's not like the kids are home now. And, you know, we probably will probably go see the kids, you know, over to the coast or something this year, maybe, you know, a couple days. But no, there's no sense decorating, you know. I just getting everybody together, it's difficult. Kids are working, and the grandkids, they're, one of them's working, and the other one, you know, is going to go with the flow. But, yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, I think Christmas should be every day. If you're asking me, it's just not one day a week. One day a year, they're going to be nice and giving presents. This always should be, Christmas should be every day, the spirit of giving.
Yeah, I'm going to give to myself. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy presents for myself.
I know. That'd be great. Oh, my gosh. But we're getting close to the new year, and I think we're going to have a very good new year, I hope. This year, even with the COVID, and even I didn't get a chance to go and be on tour like I normally am, you know, it's been I've been very blessed. We have our home, we got food on the table, we have a roof over our head, you know, we have our dog, and, you know, we got family and that kind of thing, so, and I have my health, and I'm protected, so I feel very blessed for what we have. I really do, so.
As do I. So we're just about out of time.
You're going to get better.
We want to encourage everybody to prep, because I have a prediction that this COVID situation is going to get worse. So I would encourage everyone to go to the grocery store, get what you can afford, just in case. It's better to be prepared and have as much food as possible than, you know, maybe this is all just going to blow over and everything's fine. But in that situation, you'll have extra food. Whereas if things get worse and everything shuts down, maybe the government will deliver food to everyone. Who knows? It'd be best to have an ample supply of stuff to nosh on. So that's what I've been doing, Sherry. I'm kind of, every time I go to the grocery store, I get a few cans or some dry noodles or something to add to my stash. And I think everybody should do that. That's just being smart.
Good for you. Yeah, you're having a, that's wonderful. Good for you. Yay! Yeah.
And it's just, not just the COVID. You know, anything can happen.
Yeah, anything can happen. Yep. Yep, anything can happen. But anyway, yep, everything, we're getting close to time, and it's time for us to go and have dinner. I don't know about you, Jason, but I'm going to go make some Chinese food.
I'm making a poke bowl with quinoa, vegetables, smoked salmon, a little spicy mayo, fish sauce, and that's kind of been my new thing lately. I don't know what it is, but those dang poke bowls are addicting.
That sounds good. Are you using the, sriracha?
Yes, it's sriracha mayo. I don't know if anybody's out there that's listening to this has ever had that, but I mean, it's probably terrible for you, but it's so delicious.
So I'm going to have to check it out. You have to tell me where to get that. I'm going to check it out and buy it myself. That would be – I love fish sauce. I've been cooking a lot of Vietnamese food. I'm Vietnamese, by the way. I found out with the DNA test. But I've been cooking a lot of Vietnamese food. That's one of my favorites is Vietnamese food. So tonight I'm going to be steaming some rice and cooking, stir-frying Vietnamese style, some stir-frying some rice, and after that's being steamed, and make some chicken fry.
You're making me even hungry now.
Oh, that sounds good. I think we need to go.
All right.
Jason.
I'm dying.
Hey, check your text. I already texted you. And everybody, till next week, we'll have something new to talk about.
Absolutely. I thank everybody for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday, 7 p.m. next week. Hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week, and go get supplies while you can, because my prediction is things are going to get ugly. Good night, everyone.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Jason. Take care, everybody. Thank you for following us on Facebook. Peace.
Good night.